Hi, Odyssey fans. I'm Bob, producer of the Adventures in Odyssey Club.
And I'm Jesse, editor of Focus on the Family Clubhouse magazine. Welcome to the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast.
Coming up, Odyssey illustrator Gary Locke has an incredible story to share.
But first, here's the latest news. It's time for another round of nominations for the Wit Award.
No, not the Averys. Those are coming soon. This is the award where you can nominate someone who's played an important role in your life, like Wit does for the folks in Odyssey.
It could be a parent, teacher, pastor, friend, or anyone really who has impacted you personally. Starting in mid-June, you'll be able to send us their name and story.
The winner gets a one-year membership to the club and a bundle of Odyssey stuff that's personalized to them. Plus, they get their name on a special plaque that's permanently displayed at our Welcome Center here at Focus on the Family.
You know, Bob, I went over to find that award the other day, and it's in Wit's office, appropriately enough.
And don't wait. Nominations will be accepted from mid-June to mid-July, with winners announced in August.
And now, let's turn our attention to someone who always keeps our attention with his amazing illustrations, Gary Locke. Gary's been an illustrator for decades, and he's been the principal illustrator for all of Odyssey since the year 2000.
And as we mentioned before, he had an incredible experience a few years ago. Let's hear about it.
Well, it's exciting to have longtime friend of the ministry and Odyssey, Gary Locke, with us. So welcome, Gary.
Hi. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, let's rewind back to young Gary, really young Gary. How did you get started in the world of art? I mean, what was your earliest drawing that you still have?
I don't know that I still have an earliest drawing hanging around, but I do recall like drawing on the walls in the closet in my house out on the farm.
Wow.
And then I remember kindergarten, I just noticed that I was better at this than other people. And first grade, you got to write letters and draw above. So I hurried through my writing of my letters so I could get to the story above. So I was illustrating in 1970 and 71.
Nice. I remember those pieces of paper, Gary. Those were kind of a gray sheet of paper. They were longer than they were tall.
Yep.
And they had dotted lines so that you could do your penmanship right. And it was the lower half.
Yes.
And the top half was for the picture.
Yes.
Standard issue. And everybody got that stuff.
And guess what I liked to draw then? Because everything that was on TV at that time was NASA stuff. They were prepping to go to the moon. So I was drawing these, not space shuttle, the capsules.
Uh-huh.
And I was just studying it while I was watching TV, and then I'd be drawing that the next day. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, I love that. Since I guess we're talking about your childhood, I think this is a good spot for our TRQ.
TRQ!
A totally random question from our fans. So Gary, JBot9 asks, what was your favorite toy as a kid?
Football.
A football?
A football, yeah. And in first grade, I had this little mutt of a dog that would just eat anything. And he ate the lining off of one panel on the football. So it was like plush on one panel and then regular football on the other three. And I remember in second grade, we'd moved to another house and we were playing this game where it was dusk or really dark. And we throw the ball over the house into the backyard and then everybody take off and run to the backyard to just first one to the football wins.
Right.
And I remember one time I was under that pile and I'm just smiling and it's dark outside. And I'm thinking, I really like football. Saying that to myself, like, yeah. It's lasted a long time.
And now you're coaching. So,
I do coach, yeah.
Well, kids love to draw, but for most of them, it remains a hobby, not a job. When did you realize that you wanted art to be your career?
In high school, the way I got my money to go on dates with my wife is I would draw people birthday cards in high school. In elementary school, I would make replica World War II planes out of paper, but it was kind of a hard stock paper. And overnight, I would build them. I don't know if I used tape or glue or what I did. I would bring those to school, sell them for a nickel. And in high school, I was selling birthday cards for like $1.50 or something like that. And my wife and I, she became my wife. She became Wife Saver later. We would go to McDonald's and get a small fry and a small Sprite. And that would be our date night.
Wow.
Hopefully, we could afford $5 for a movie. And if not, we'd go to her house and watch Fantasy Island with her parents.
And your work with Adventures in Odyssey goes all the way back to 1990, yeah. which I think was on the front of some Chick-fil-A covers. So how did you connect with Focus on the Family? Because I think you knew Focus even before that.
Yeah. At 19 years old, I got a job at Gospel Publishing House, the Assemblies of God world headquarters. They had about 15 artists on staff, and they took me on. And it was me, and I had another guy about my age that was an intern who later became a full-time artist there, and a bunch of guys in their 50s and a couple of ladies. But the guys in their 50s all listened to conservative Christian talk radio all morning long. And Focus on the Family was on at 9:30, came on after Chuck Swindoll. I got listening to that. And I really, really liked the whole Focus on the Family thing. And I heard, I'm not sure who it was, that was on the show with James Dobson talking about doing this audio drama. And I believe I'd already contacted and got a hold of Jim Cale over at Citizen Magazine before.
Yep.
So I had one contact over there. And this is about the same time. I'm like, I want to be part of this thing. So as I was in my 20s and 30s, if I wanted to work with somebody, I found out a way to contact them and call them and chat. And we got in. And a few years later, a buddy of mine from Gospel Publishing House, who was one of the artists, ends up at Focus in the Adventures in Odyssey on that floor.
Mm.
And he ends up calling me one day and said, hey, they want me to ask you if you'd like to be the full-time guy on this. And at the time, I was still very, very, very busy with National, Coca-Cola, and Sports Illustrated, and Time Magazine every 3 or 4 weeks, and just tons and tons of national stuff on top of my rep sending me stuff for advertising. You know, those had big budgets on them. I'm like, I don't have time for it, but yes, I do. Mm. I've really felt like I'm supposed to be doing this.
You talked about how the industry has changed. So how have you changed? Like, is your process different? Is your artistic style any different?
That's a good story. So after I left Gospel Publishing House at 26 years old with two kids, I shared an office space with a buddy of mine who's still the best man that I've ever met. His name was Matt Key. And best designer I've ever met, best athlete I've ever met, and we just got along great, and we shared office space, and we moved around. There was a 10-story building downtown, 10-story building, and we probably moved in 5 different office spots in that building. But when we got up to the 10th floor, we called it the 10th floor Palace of Art and Design. And we just had a ball and threw grapes out the window at people. And oh my.
Kids, don't try this at home.
Yeah. We had a lot of fun. Stuff you shouldn't do from the 10th floor. Oh my. So I'm telling you all this because in 2008, in late September, I was planning on going down to the lake with Matt and his family. He was almost a professional level wakeboarder. It was a beautiful, beautiful afternoon in September. And I thought, you know what? My kids were over at someone's house. Let's just me and the wife stay home. We'll stay home. We'll watch Nebraska football, get a pizza. And he went up doing one of his favorite tricks and came down in heaven.
Mm.
He took too many shots to the head as far as falling, trying these tricks. 49 years old, could do a backflip on his birthday every year. He was still benching 450 pounds at 49 years old. They pronounced him dead 3 days later. And as you can tell, I'm still rocked by that.
Yeah.
And after like 3 days of just crying, I asked myself, sitting here at this desk, okay, if Matt could have come to here and said, okay, I'm going to be gone next week forever, I'm going to give you this last thing. And so I asked the Lord what he would tell me, and the Lord immediately said, go digital. So I'd already been dabbling in Photoshop a little bit with a mouse, but I got a Cintiq tablet and dropped the paintbrushes and went digital. And it took almost 10 years, I think, of daily work to actually get to a point where I thought I was competent. My work looked like I wanted it to look.
Hmm.
I don't know, it's a long, drawn-out story, but yeah, it started with Matt dying. Yeah, a rough time.
Well, Gary, when we talked about sitting down and talking about this on the podcast today, one of the questions you wanted to know if we were going to ask you had to do with the fact that you died 3 years ago. And so God obviously kept you here to tell us about it. Explain to our listeners what happened and how it changed your life.
All right. So this is December 18th, 2019. And this is late afternoon when this happened. I'd gone for a run sometime during the day, and I'd started texting my wife and said, I don't feel very good. She was at work that day, and I don't feel very good, and sent her a picture of myself laying on the couch here. And I was also sending messages to my pastor, who also left in 2008, but he was here to bury his mother that weekend, and him and his wife were going to stay in our basement that night. So I was asking him, hey, could you maybe drive out here? I may need to go to the hospital, and send him that photo. And he thought I was joking because I joke with him all the time. So he didn't come out. So my wife shows up out here about 5 o'clock and starts to head out to my studio where I said I was. And I was in the bedroom instead. She heard me somehow say, bleh, and she comes in and checks on me. And she asked me what the trouble is. And I said, I've got a headache. And I put my hand on, rubbed it across my forehead. Next, rubbed my hand across my chest. And I'm going by what I've been told on all of this because I don't remember anything for 6 weeks there. I don't remember anything till I woke up. So we tried to make it out to the car. I couldn't make it out the kitchen door. And she said, sit down on the chair here. And I sat down, and then I just slumped over and passed out and started bleeding out of my ears and out of my nose. And she kind of got me in a better position on the floor and said, all right, Lord, I guess we're doing this, and started CPR. She's kind of a doctor wannabe kind of lady. She watches all of the medical programs on TV and just has a fascination with medical stuff and just naturally knows how to do CPR. You know, the whole family just calls her for, this is happening. What do I need to do? So she's that kind of girl. So my wife, who we now deem as Wife Saver, she started CPR on me, called 911, and they said she was doing it just a little bit too slow. So she was glad to know that she was too slow, and she moved up, and she did 15 minutes of CPR as we live about 15 miles from a hospital and 6 miles out of town. I had the Widowmaker is what I had. They say you don't survive that. If what I had happens outside of the hospital, you've got like a 2% chance of making it. But if it's outside of town, you just don't, you don't make it. The EMTs came, and that whole thing went absolutely perfect. We talked to the EMT, the head EMT there, about 6 months later. And he said he won awards for the call at my house. Just everything worked exactly perfect. And it was a big open area in our kitchen, their hearth area where everybody could work. I asked one of my family members the other day, I said, how many people were in the kitchen while all that was going on? And they said, probably 20 to 25 people. I mean, eventually were there, and they got me off to the hospital. They passed my gurney around the different rooms in the hospital with the statement, you got the dead guy. And later that night, I got a stent put in. They kept me in a coma. And on Friday morning, so this happened on a Wednesday night, on Friday morning, the daily updates on me were he's got a 10% chance of surviving at all, and it's going south. It's not looking good. And my pastor from James River Church came over, and we were kind of workout buddies. I probably worked out with him 6 years at 5 o'clock in the morning, so we got to be really good friends. And he came over and laid hands on me and prayed for me and walked over to talk to my wife over in the corner of the room when the nurse exclaimed, oh, he's awake.
Wow.
I was intubated and awake, and I'm claustrophobic, so that's not a good combination. And it took about 24 hours for them to say I passed all the hurdles I needed to pass to have the tubes taken out. And then they started checking on me, you know, can you feel this? Can you feel that? Can you do this? And I started joking around with people. And I could see the nurses and doctors in the room just with that weird look in their eye, like, this isn't supposed to be happening. He should not be alert and joking around with people. And 3 days later, I'm out of the hospital. I'll go back to the next to last day. I got to take a walk around the ICU
in my gown and a walker, and they helped me get around. You know, I was hooked up to like 18 different monitors. So they had to unhook me and let me take a lap around the ICU. And I'd just been coming to realize this year that the looks that I saw on people's faces, you know, you'll get a golf clap. Hey, yeah, you're doing great, buddy. Way to go. Keep it up. It wasn't a golf clap. There were two expressions going on. One is the dead guy's walking. And the other one was just why we do this. This is why. You could see that in their face. This is why we do this.
You talked about the prayers of your pastor and your family was praying, and we were praying. You mentioned Jim Cale earlier, the first person you connected with here at Focus on the Family, who is still on the Clubhouse and Clubhouse Junior team. So he spread the word, the Odyssey guys. I mean, there were prayers going out for you all over the world. And when we heard you were up walking that quickly, there's only one explanation, and that's God. Yeah. There's really only one. Really.
There were things that I noticed just sitting in the room sometimes by myself in the ICU that I could feel prayers. And this lasted for about 10 days. And it was real strong on the first couple of days. And it kind of faded, kind of like the smell of roast will fade away after your wife cooks the roast. But I know what prayers feel like when I'm being prayed for.
We were rejoicing with you and your family here, and you did miss a deadline on your Odyssey art for Clubhouse, you know, but we do forgive you for that because you've done so much artwork for us
There's another part of that, though.
Oh,
I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, go on.
There's another part of that, though. I was working on a sketch, if I remember right, of Renee shaking hands with a professor.
That was with Horace, yeah.
Yeah, I hadn't got to paint that yet. And after I got home, it took me about 4 or 5 days to get down to the office. And I did paint that right after. That's the first thing I painted after the heart attack.
And we kept trying to tell you, you don't need to get back to work that quickly. We'd figure things out. But you would not be stopped. We just could not keep you down.
I needed it. It's, you know, it's who I am. So I needed it.
Do you have a favorite piece of art that you've done for Odyssey?
Yes, actually, my favorite one ever. There's two of them. One of them is Eugene getting chased by a bull.
Oh, yes. We love that one. Yep.
I do, too. That was just the best.
You are amazing at drawing cows, though, man. You are.
Yes, that's why it's the best, because I get to do cows. I never get to do bulls. I think I've drawn three bulls maybe in my entire career, and that was one of them. And there's another one where the kids are stuck up in a tree in a treehouse, and there's cowboys, nefarious cowboys, riding their horses below. And I liked the horses, too. I like drawing those horses and cows. And cowboys are just...
Horses are not easy to draw. Anybody who's ever tried to draw...
The first art book I ever got in, like, third grade, my grandparents bought me a book, How to Draw Horses. I wore that thing out.
Well, we're going to have both of those pieces of artwork on our website so people can take a look at them.
Well, Gary, 20-plus years of excellence with the art. Your legacy with Odyssey is something that will live on, and thanks to God's providence, you're living on to keep going with it. So what do you hope your legacy is and your contribution to the series?
Tell you what, you know, because deadlines can get harrowing, and you get frustrated with different things, and you get things that come back. This needs to be changed. That needs to be changed. But, you know, I go to a very large church, and sometimes I'm just talking to people and end up mentioning what I do for a living. And 90% of the time, people have listened to it for their whole childhood. Our church is pretty young. You know, average age is probably 28. But it's really enlightened me to understand that I've been part of just a really good thing in a lot of really good people's lives. And they're growing up and they're having kids and their kids are growing up on it. And it's one of those things where my family doesn't really listen. It's just something dad does. But there's so many times that people are just, you've got to be kidding me. And it's special and it's cool. And it's just one of those cool things that I know I'm going to walk the streets of heaven high-fiving people that were adventurers and Odyssey people.
Gary, we are glad you're still with us and you're doing well. And the best is yet to come. We've got a lot of artwork left and characters to create together.
Good. Good. This is fun. This is good stuff.
Yeah. And thanks for being with us. It was a blast to talk to you. It's been too long. So we'll have to get you on the podcast again here sooner.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. It's been great.
You can see some samples of Gary's artwork, including his first illustrations for Odyssey and his favorite drawings, on our website now.
And you can see his artwork on every album cover, and each month alongside the exclusive adventures in the club.
That's all for this edition of the official Adventures in Odyssey podcast, a presentation of Focus on the Family.
See those illustrations, find a station, or join the club at adventuresinodyssey.com. Or call us at 1-800-A-FAMILY. I'm Bob.
And I'm Jesse, reminding you that with God in your life, every day is an adventure.
Adventures in Odyssey has taken generations of children on an exciting journey, all the while sharing biblical principles and activating their imaginations. Now, in 2024, we'll be airing our 1,000th episode. To celebrate, we're inviting every member of the Odyssey family to join us for one grand party. This spectacular two-day event is packed with fun and excitement for Adventures in Odyssey fans of every age. Partygoers will enjoy an unmatched immersive experience into the town of Odyssey. Meet and greets with cast and crew, Q&A sessions, trivia contests, and more. The party is topped off with a live episode recording starring fan-favorite characters. It's all happening on August 2nd and 3rd in beautiful Colorado Springs, Colorado. Tickets for One Grand Party are going fast. Learn more at onegrandparty.com.